And the topic is one that comes from a well-known Gemara. It's actually a story, a halacha and a story in the Gemara in Masechta Sukkah and Daf Mem Aleph. The Mishnah in Masechta Sukkah tells us, at the end of the second line, a well-known halacha, you're all familiar with it, Ein adam yotzei lechavasa b'yom tov harishon b'lulava shachavero. You can't use a borrowed or otherwise any kind of, for any reason, a lulav that you don't own on the first day. You have to own your lulav. Of course, if it would be in Chutz Laretz, we're talking about the first 2 days, the days. But midaraisa, on the first day, there's a mitzvah of the tilas lulav, and if you don't own the lulav, even though you took it, shook it, and you did everything perfectly, you're not yotzei the mitzvah. Now the Gemara, of course, wants to know why this should be. After all, if you don't own your own tefillin, but you borrow someone's tefillin, you are completely yotzei. If you don't own your own shofar, but you hear someone else's shofar, you are completely yotzei. Most mitzvahs, you don't need to own the object. You just need to do the performance of the mitzvah. So why should you have to own the lulav? Where does that come from? So the Gemara explains, Menohani mili, Tatan Rabbanam, Adrasha. The pasuk, when it's talking about taking the Dalet Minim, says, V'lakachtem lachem. Now, even though you just got to Israel, and even though you may not be expert dikduk, right, you probably are aware that there's something very redundant in that phrase. What does V'lakachtem mean? It means you should take. What does lachem mean? You. You should take, right? If it said V'lakach lachem, then we would have had a question, why doesn't it say V'lakachtem? But at least the two words wouldn't have been redundant. Here they're saying the same thing. Lakachtem lachem. The lachem is obviously extraneous. It's not necessary. So the Gemara darshins. Lakachtem shetei lekichel b'kalach avechad. First of all, it says lakachtem. You should take. I mean, you shouldn't think that this is one of those mitzvahs where someone could do it for you. Maybe someone could do it by a shliach, or even better, that in the Sanhedrin they'll do it, and then we'll be yotzei through them or something. Might have a hava. I mean, it says the Gemara, but lakachtem means you have to do it yourself. Lachem, so what's the need for the extra lachem? Misha lachem. That tells you it's not enough to take a lulav personally, but you have to own the lulav personally. Lahotzi, that comes to exclude as a shoal, as a gozel. Either if you borrowed a lulav in a better case scenario, or if you stole a lulav, we know there's a concept which is not our topic at all today, of kinyan egzela on some level, to some extent, even though you've done something terrible, but you own the lulav if you steal it. So you might have thought that you own it sufficiently. Kamash, because for other halachos you own something you steal. Kamash malan, even though there's a certain level of ownership when you borrow something or when you steal it, it's not sufficient. Lachem teaches us you need to own it 100%. If you don't own it, you're not yotzei. Bikanam ruchachamim, and here from here is where the chachamim learn this halacha. Einanam yotzei dechavasav yom tov rishon shalachag lulav shachavero elam kein natan lo bimatana. Aye, but what if I don't have enough money? What if I just don't own one? And you, I am much older than you. And even I, when I was growing up, everyone always had their own lulav. But if you speak to people my parents' age, perhaps slightly older than your parents' age, it was very common, even in the biggest communities in America, let alone if you wanted to go back another generation to Europe, it was very common for there to be lulav shortages. People simply didn't have access. Who's shipping them from Egypt? And second of all, even if you had access, no one had money. It was very, very expensive. So I know, I mean, I was in Baltimore the last 7 years before I was a rabbi. People told me they were growing up, even, for example, in a big famous yeshiva like Ner Yisrael. One of my members of my shul grew up, and his father was running the yeshiva. He said, in Ner Yisrael, he remembers as a kid, it was one lulav. One. So what do you do? After all, the Gemara just said, lachem, you can't use a borrowed lulav. So if I lend it to you, that's a halakha category of shul, that doesn't work. But said the Gemara, if I give it to you as a matana, then at the moment that I give it to you, you own it. So then, what's the difference if you paid for it or not? Right? Lots of things in life we didn't pay for. So look at your age. Right? Doesn't mean you don't own it. Your parents gave you something, you own it. Your neighbor gave you something, you own it. So if I give you a lulav, it's a matana, it's yours. I'm giving it to you as a gift. I shook already. I don't need it. It's yours. Now you shake, then you give it to him. That's what, and in fact, tachava in communities throughout the world for men now, it's almost unheard of. Thank God we're so lucky. But it used to be. Lulav, one person would shake, to the next person, the next person. So technically, that's called a matana. If you give it as a matana. If I just say I'm lending it to you, that doesn't work. If I give it to you as a matana, it works. And to prove this point, the Gemara tells a story. I don't want to belabor it because we're always running short on time. So I won't read the whole story inside. But I'll paraphrase the story and then I'll read the punchline to you. The Gemara tells a well-known story of five Tanaim who are on a boat. They're on a boat over Sukkos. Couldn't get off. They might have left 3 weeks before. They might have left 3 months before. Who knows? But in today's day and age, but Kal v'chomer in their time, sea travel, especially, was unpredictable. They were on a boat, and it was already Sukkot. But they had at least enough time. They thought ahead. They had a little of an esrog, but only one. So, of course, the owner, that Tana, he took the lulav. And after he was done, he gave it as a gift to the next person, to the next person, to the next person. And then the Gemara concludes, if you look where I have it underlined at the bottom, the last one was Rabbi Akiva, the famous Rabbi Akiva. Not the Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Akiva took the lulav, but Yatsabo, he shook it and was Yotzei. And then afterwards, he returned it to Rabbi Gamliel, who was the owner of the lulav. So, frek the Gemara, they're going to ask the question, Lomali Lamemar Hichziro. Why did the Torah go, we're lumdashizing the story. Right? There's no extra words. Why does the Gemara, when it tells us the story, add the fact that the last Tana, Rabbi Akiva, returned the lulav to its owner, Rabbi Gamliel? Our answers, Mils Agav Orche. In terms of the original point to the story, it's incidental, in a chanami. But it's Kamash Malan, it's actually an important extra word, because it tells us about a certain halacha. What's that halacha? Matana Amanas Lahasir Shema Matana. Apparently Rabbi Gamliel had explicitly given it to them on condition that they return it. It was not a permanent gift, it was a temporary gift. Matana Amanas Lahasir. Right? When I was a kid growing up, there was a phrase, which now it's politically incorrect to use, called an Indian giver. That says you give something and then you want it back. So if you trick the person, that's taka, not a good thing under whatever term you use. But if you tell someone, Meirosh, I'm giving it to you, but you're going to have to give it back to me at some point, either you specify the time or whatever, that, according to halacha, says the Gemara here, matana amanas lahasir, you might have thought that doesn't count, because it's temporary. It's not permanent. Kamash malan, matana lahasir, shma matana. And therefore, even though Rabbi Gamliel gave it to Tana X, who gave it to Tana Y, who gave it to Tana Z, who gave it to Rabbi Akiva, and in each case they had a chiyuv, because they accepted, that was the deal, I'm giving it to you as a gift. Amanas lahasir, if you accept that, then that's the deal, you have to return it. And since Rabbi Akiva fulfilled the Tanai, right? So if I give you something on condition that you do something, and then you don't do it, then retroactively, the Mafreya, it was no gift. But Rabbi Akiva returned the lulav, fulfilling the Tanai, and therefore all four of the other Tanaim were also Yotzei, just like the original owner, Rebbe Gamliel. He had Amar Rava, and this confirms the story in the Tanaim, which we now in the Gemara are quoting, confirms a Psak, which we know from Rava, which in which the person says to another person, Hey, look, Esrog ze al manaser tasiruli, I'm giving you the Esrog, I'm not lending it to you, I'm giving it to you, on condition that you eventually return it to me. Not lower than that second person takes the esrog, the yatzavo, and he's yotze, his zero, he returned it, yatza, lo zero, lo yatza. So if he actually returns it, which was the deal, then he fulfills his part of the deal, and he's yotze. But if he never fulfilled it, he never returned it, then he didn't keep his part of the deal, retroactively I never meant to give it to him, and he is not yotze. Okay? Now, this is, aside from the cool story and all, just the thought of the five rabbis on the boat is enough to, we could spend time thinking about that. But the important point for our purposes, which I would like to focus on, is this, the salient point, the halacha that comes out of this. I want to analyze this category of matana amanas lahasir generally, and then I want to show you three nafkaminas that hopefully end with a chiddush against one of the contemporary Gedolei HaPoskim. I offer Gilu Uber Oda, if we'll have time to get to that, specifically related to things related to Dalet Mina. But this category of matana amanas lahasir is a very intriguing one. Because on the one hand, let me set the stage for you, on the one hand we have a matana as a halakha category. I can give you a gift, I can give you a Hanukkah present. Is it your birthday? Okay, but you would accept the present anyway, probably.
I would probably.
Yes, okay. I'm not on the level of spending matanas with you either, so you can give me presents, I will accept that. Right? That's a kinyan, that's a halakha kinyan. I've given it to you, period, it's yours. It doesn't matter if you buy it, that's also a kinyan. But the result of buying it and giving it as a gift are the same. You own it 100%. On the other hand, you can have something which is clearly not yours, like a shawl. I lent it to you. So I lent it to you. You can use it. I lent you my broom, but you never owned it for 1 second because I lent it to you. I let you use it. I didn't give it to you. So of course you're going to give it back. It's not yours. Matana manas, those two categories are, in the extreme, so to speak, are easy to understand. What is fascinating about this topic is that it's somewhere in the middle. It's somewhere bridging the divide. On the one hand, we're calling it a matana. But that would imply permanence. On the other hand, it's not permanent, because Meirosh, from the beginning, I told you I'm only giving it to you, Amanas Lahasir. Whether it's Amanas Lahasir after you use it, whether it's Amanas Lahasir tomorrow, whether it's Amanas Lahasir in a year, all details, not important. But I told you that there's a deal, and you have to accept it. And if you accept it, then you gave it back. So on the one hand, I might have thought, what's the difference between this and borrowing?
It's just a word game, or it's like
exactly. But it clearly isn't, and that's the purpose of this year. Since it obviously must be more than that, the question is, what is the difference? How is this? And that's what, again, now you appreciate the language of the Gemara. The Gemara says matana machzahasir shmo matana. I can't tell you that for sure everything I just said was going on in the Gemara's mind, but basically that's what's going on in the Gemara's mind, which is it's sitting in between two poles. Is it a matana or is it sha'ul? And there's going to be halakhic consequences. Which one is it? Yes, it's a little different, but halakhically, significance. What's the significance of it? Is it more like that or like that? Or says shma matana. Despite the fact that it's temporary, despite the fact that it looks like a sha'ul, like a borrow, like a gift, like something I'm lending or borrowing, halakhically, it's in the category of matana. But I have to return it, and I know from the beginning I have to return it. Shma matana. Now that's a very intriguing thing. And you can imagine something that's so intriguing and something that's bridging these different poles, you won't be surprised, you shouldn't be surprised, that in fact, there's a major, major battle royal machlokes between Rishonim and Achronim, how to understand this category. Not to argue whether it is or isn't matana, that's a Gemara. But why is it? How to understand that? Just as you should know, P.S., another Yesodistic Gemara on this topic, much shorter, it relates to Kedushin, Masecht Kedushin Davav, where the Gemara there talks about if you give a ring to a woman, you propose to a woman, Kesef Kedushin, Al Manas Lahasir. So first of all, Hilchos Romance, not a good idea, don't do it. But we know Halacha doesn't really have such a, usually not dealing with the romantic factor, halachically, does it work or not? The Gemara's Lashon there is, when it comes to Matanas Lahasir, Bakulo Kani, Levar, make Kedushin. It doesn't work. Now, why not? That would be Masechta Kedushin, Hilchos Kedushin Sugya. But the implication of the Gemara is that it works for most things. It's considered a valid kinyan. It's a valid gift. I give you something, it's as if I gave it to you for real. In all other halachic areas. Haraya, what better proof do you need than this? Here we have an extra halacha called Lachem. It's not just regular ownership, there's like super ownership that's needed for the lulav. Lachem, pasuk. And yet, lulav matan masal hasir is good enough. So both the Gemara Kedushin and especially this Gemara make the point that halachically it's considered very valid. It's a matana, it's not a struggle. But of course the question is, why not? How do we understand this category? We're going to go through that in the next few minutes. I'll give you two, there are others, but I'll give you two nafkaminas generally. Then I want to get to three specific sukkis, dalad minim points. Question? Okay, so we'll get to that. Yes, anyone else? Questions? Yes? Just stretching. Stretching is good too. Okay. So, for the purpose of the source sheet, I didn't put everything on because there's a ton of material here. I just wanted to give you some representative or some samples. But Rov Rishonim, I could give you five other examples. Rov Rishonim hold like the Ritva and the Rush. What do they say? Very fascinating. Look at the Ritva from Sukkah on our Gemara. Perish, what does it mean? Mamon gamar hu shelo l'chol davar. Or the Rush, very similar lashon. Sar shi'itnu lo, when you give it to him, b'matana gamura. Now what they mean to say, and this will be even clearer when we see who argues on them, but what they mean to say is as follows. Imagine for a moment, if you will, anyone here like comics? You know, like comic strips, there's like the box. So you read it sequentially. So when we have a matana masal hasir, already in the first box, in the present, we know, if we peek ahead, we know how the story is going to end. I'm going to have to return it to you. But I'm not returning it now. I'm going to keep it in the first box, second box, third box, and maybe I'll return it in the comic's fourth box. The question is, to what extent is the fact that we know what's going to happen in the fourth box, where does that make any difference now? Does that impact, right? You know, so there's, you know, we talk about going back to the future, time travel, right? So we know what the future is going to be, but does that already impact the present? Says the Rush and the Ritzvah, absolutely not. What you see from this Gemara is something fascinating, and that is that at the time you give it as a gift is 100% a gift. Period, end of story. You own it gomor, completely 100%. We know that I'm going to have to give it back. We know that there's an explicit condition. Enachinami, they say. But that, while true, is completely extraneous. It's a side detail. It's in the footnotes. It doesn't affect the basic reality. I only own it if I fulfill the condition. So it's true that if come four days from now I don't return it like I promised, retroactively I never owned it. But until that happens, or especially if I fulfill the t'nai, when I owned it 100% as if it's been mine forever and it's been in my family for four generations. I own it 100%. In the moment that I own it, we don't care about the future at all. When we get to the future, we'll worry about the future. Right now, I own it 100%. So is there any shaila why I can shake a hole and be yosei? No, I own it 100%. I'm going to have to return it. That's in the future. Who cares? It's in the future. We live, say, the Ritva and the Rush in essence, halachically in the present. Comes along the Rush, not in his comments on the Gemara, but in his tshuvas, the tshuvas HaRush, and he quotes a Kadmon, an earlier Rishon, who only really exists because other people quote him. I mean, of course he doesn't. But we don't have, as far as I know, we don't have any of his own of his Svarim, but he is quoted by the Rush and by others. Somebody named Rav Avigdor Kohen Tzedek, which of course was shortened to Rav Avigdor Katz. Rav Avigdor Kohen Tzedek, quoted by the Rush, which was then made famous because the Ksos HaChoshen quoted it, but it was originally dug up by the Rush. The Rav Avigdor Katz, Rav Avigdor Kohen Tzedek, argues. Who else argues? Also the Tosas Rid. Some of you may not be as familiar with Tosas Rid. It was, as his name implies, in the Balia Tosfos, but not in the Tosfos on the page. Separate Sefer that we have, separate Mefarish Amshas, a beautiful, beautiful stuff, the Tosas Rid. I once heard from Rav Rosenzweig that he thought, among all the Rishonim commenting on the Gemara, that the one who most closely foreshadowed Reb Chaim Brisker was the Tosas Rid. Very, very deep and sophisticated and analytical approach to the Gemara. So the Tosas Rid happens to agree with Rav Avigdor Katz, and they have a completely different understanding than the Rush and the Ritva. Let's take a look at the Rush, the Tshuva. Tshuva's Rush is as follows. Lo nafik bay, you're not yotzei if somebody gives you something. Ad the makni le knias guf, you have to really own it. Lisha, even though it's only temporary. Or he repeats it on the second line. The third line. The kinin haguf, en chanami is a kinin haguf, meaning you really, really own it. You own the actual item. But, as you see on the last line, mihu, kinin haguf, l'sha'a mikri. Even though it is temporary. Yet, the chiddush of the Gemara is, u'bahachi sagi, that's enough. L'kachem lechem, as we saw in the Gemara, misha lechem, mishas lechicha kach perachmanishya mishalo va'ika. Right now you own it? That's enough for us. But what you see him stressing, whereas the Rush and the Ritva said it's a kinyan, what was the word they kept on using? Gamur? He says it's not a kinyan gamur, it's only a kinyan lasha. Which is another way of saying, according to the Rav Avigdor Katz, we can already see the future in the present. The fact that we know you're going to have to return it, we can't pretend. Come on, you're going to have to return it. We know that's part of the deal. Enachanami. And that already has an impact in the present.
So what? Now you can do whatever you want.
Oh! Who said? We're almost in the middle of this year. We'll see. Major nafkaminas between these two things. But it's important before we see the nafkaminas to see the different... You've already seen the language of the Rishonim, a different approach. The Rush and the Ritva say you own it 100%. You promise to return it? That's sometime in the future. We'll deal with that when we get to it. No impact on the present. Says Rav Avigdor Katz, and the Tosas Rid says a similar idea. It's not. We already know about the future in the present. Take a look at the lashon of the Tosas Rid. Kana hamekabel, I own it. Ad osa hazman, but only for a limited amount of time. La'achar hazman, chozer labala. It will return automatically. Or as he says in the last three words, which are really important for us. Yes, it's a matana. Yes, you're yotzei, but velo matana lachalutin. It's not an absolute 100% matana. It's enough of a matana to be yours, but it's, and even for lulav, but it's not a matana gemura. Whereas the Rosh and the Ritva phrase that it was a matana gemura. So I'm just being a little bit cute, but I happen to think, at least for me, it helps crystallize the difference. It'll be even more clear, I hope, to you when I give you some practical examples. But in essence, to summarize, this is important, we can't go even one step further with all the regular as well as lulav things if we don't understand this. Two fundamentally different approaches. And again, the way I'm phrasing it, to what extent do we care about, do we acknowledge, do we take into account the future already in the present? We already know the future is going to be. You're going to have to return it. That's a given. The Rosh and the Ritva, and it's really Rov Rishonim, we pass in the Shulchan Aruch this way as well, say we don't care. Tnai Milsachritihi, it's extraneous, it's an important detail, but it's only a detail, it's in the future, not in the present. Right now you own it 100%, no more, no less than anybody else owns their lulav and esrog. They spent $500, somebody gave it to you as a matan masasir, you own it just as much as them. Right now, forever. 3 days from now, that's a separate story. Or whatever the deal was. The other Rishonim, or Victor Katz, the Ksos is going to hold this way as well, holds no. You don't own it permanently, you own it temporarily. It's just that temporary ownership is good enough. Temporary ownership is not the same thing as borrowing. Now, what is the difference between temporary ownership and borrowing? That we have to get to. And that would be a good shiloh according to them. According to the Rav Rishonim, we know the difference. I really own it. I'm not borrowing it. I own it. Okay? Two different approaches. Everyone with me? Good. Yes. Good. Give me the thumbs up. That's good. That's good. Just next time, do it like this, so that way I will know it was you raising your hand. There you go. Okay. Quick. Two nafkah minas, because I want to get to sukkah. I want to get to sukkah stuff. I have three stuff to go on sukkah. But two important nafkah minas. The biggest nafkah mina, the one that all the Rishonim and Acharonim speak about, is the following shaila. Very basic. It's probably already on all of your minds. That is, I gave it to you. Matana, till tomorrow. Or whatever. Let's just say that was the deal. When you give it back to me, do we need a new kinyan to cement that transfer back?
Forget about that.
No, not forget about that. That's what I want to talk about.
Yes.
I'm standing here. I decided. Just kidding. We're not forgetting about that. It's important. Now I'm being serious. Then I was joking. When I give you something initially, of course, if it's a kinyan, if it's a matana, then you have to make a kinyan. Like anything in halacha. If I want to take ownership over it, it has to be a kinyan. The fact that it's not with money is irrelevant. The money is irrelevant to the kinyan. It has to be a kinyan. Mashicha, let's say. I draw it to me, I own it. You gave it to me, I draw it to me. Great. So when I return it to you, after I've shucked the lulav, or after I did whatever I did with the bike you gave me as a matan masasir, do you, upon retaking it, have to do a new kinyan or not? This is a huge machlokas. Take a look at number three. The Ritva says, and other Rishonim, the Rosh example, say, Ukishimahziralo, Kana Gamura Boi, Kisharak Nosbaum. You need to make a new kinyan. The Nesiva Samishbat passes this way as well. The Tsarech Kinyan Kishemachzir. However, the Ksos Achoshen argues, says, Lulei Divrei HaRosh and the Ritva, etc. Yirelin is Daiti, the Matana Sahasir, Hu Kemashmo. It's Kemashmo, meaning it's Almana Sahasir, and that we take that literally. I already know now I'm going to have to return it. The Ein Bo Tznai Haknah. Therefore, there's no requirement for a new Haknah. I gave you the esrog. If that was the deal, let's say I gave it to you as a tonight. Here, take it, use it, and then return it to me. Humatana gamura b'chaluta ad hazman. It only is until that time. Then the Ksos HaChoshen feels like I'm a lonely warrior, because even though he's a Ksos HaChoshen, no one likes to be lonely, and B, he was an Achron. So he says, I was looking and looking, who's going to help me, who's going to agree with me? Oh, Baruch Hashem, I found this Rav Victor Cohen Tzedek, I can hang my hat on him. But really, 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 Ksos HaChoshen is going on his own. And he says, no, you don't need a kinyan. Why don't you need a kinyan? Because it goes back to the original owner automatically. No need for a new kinyan. It automatically transfers back. What do you mean? Who ever heard such a thing? If I owned it, it automatically go to you. There's no such thing as automatic pilot in halacha. You give it to me, I need a kinyan. I give it to you, you need a kinyan. And that's what the Rav Rishonim say. So what's going on here? What's going on here is obvious. The Rosh and the Ritva are l'shitasam. They hold that a matan masahasir is a full 100% gift. Who cares about the future? Now I own it completely. So I took ownership over it. I need to make a kinyan. Yes, I agreed. I accepted upon myself as a condition that I would return it to you. Good, so now I'm returning it to you. But that has nothing to do with ownership. I owned it. Now I'm returning it to you. You own it now. You need to make a new kinyan. But when I owned it 100%. I made a kinyan even on it. So when you want it back from me, you now need to make a kinyan. Because it's as if there was no past. You are taking it as if you're a completely new owner. So you need a new kinyan. However, says the Ktsos is l'shitaso. Because the Ktsos holds like Rabbi Victor Katz. They say what? Let's pretend. How can we pretend that it's that we don't know about the future? I already agreed to give it back. Now I agreed that I'm going to give it back tomorrow. What does that mean? That means that when comes tomorrow, or let's say the Tanai is, here, take it until you're Yosei, or whatever like that, whenever the Tanai comes up, automatically the ownership goes back. Imagine it like the sands of an hourglass. I own it as long as the sands on top of the hourglass. As long as the Tanai has not yet, that condition has not come to fore. But once that does, whether it's a chronological date, tomorrow, whenever, or whether it's once you're Yosei, whatever the Tanai is, or because whenever it snows, it doesn't matter what the Tanai is. Once that happens, the sands of the hourglass naturally go. And Mamela, what was mine, is not mine anymore, because I only owned it temporarily. Remember, what did the Ktsos say? What did Rav Victor Katz say? What did the Tosfos Ritz say? It's a kinyan l'shah. My whole kinyan was only temporary. So once that time period, as short or as long as it is, whenever that goes, dissipates, Mamela, the ownership transfers back, and therefore there's no need for a new kinyan. So here we're dealing now clearly not with word games, and not with, you know, semantics. There's a clear nafka minas, a machlokas harishonim. Do you need to make a new kinyan? Rov Rishonim say yes, because you owned it completely. There's a minority view, espoused by the Ksos, for example, that says no, Mamela it will go back, because it was always only temporary. I'll give you a variation of this, the Chasam Sofer and the Tshuva on the bottom of the page. Chasam Sofer says, let's say I'm ready to give it back to you. And you say, you know what, I don't need it anymore, I'm Mocha. I'm Mocha. I'm Mocha on the Tanai, keep it. Do I need to make a new kinyan? I've had it for 3 days. That was, you said it here. Take it. Take my new MP3 player for 3 days. I'm going to ask that you give it back to me in 3 days. Now comes 3 days, I come to give you back your MP3 player. So you know what, I'm Mochel, I got a new one anyway, you keep it. Do I, and I definitely want to keep the MP3 player, do I need a new kinyan? Or is the kinyan that I did 3 days ago and you gave it to me enough? So says the Chasam Sofer, you don't need a new kinyan. Why? Because the original kinyan that you made was permanent. When you made that kinyan, you owned it completely 100%. It's just that, side deal, I had an obligation to return it to you. But once you waive that side deal, then we go back to the main point. The main point was you gave it to me and it was mine. And the Chasam Sofer has a beautiful lashon. I love this Chasam Sofer, not only because of what he says, but how he says it. If you take a look at the phrase, it's a beautiful line on the first line of the Chasam Sofer. He refers to it as Matana Gemura. Letzmitzas Almin, it's a complete gift forever. Letzmitzas Almin is a poet who is saying forever. Rak the Talab Tanai. It's a beautiful phrase. You have to appreciate the language, and if you understand the sugya, you appreciate the drama of it. He says it's a permanent gift forever, just that you have to give it back. Like that's just a detail. What do you mean it's just a detail? No, according to the Chasam Sofer, like the Ritva, like the Rush, like the Nesivis, yes, it's just a detail. It's totally extraneous to the issue of ownership. When you own it forever and ever and ever. But you have a detail, you have to, a Tanai, you have to give it back. I'm going to mention briefly, if you turn the page, I take it back, we're not going to turn the page, we'll stop there. We'll stop there with the general stuff, and I want to spend the last 10 minutes we have now on some Sukkah stuff. So just very quickly, yeah, we're going to go with the Shana Aleph guys, they have preference.
Didn't we see in the Gemara, though, that it's only... the Tanai is only considered yours once the Tanai is kept that it was returned.
No, it's yours now, yeah. But if you don't keep the Tanai, then retroactively it was never yours.
How do you not keep the Tanai if it was back?
What's the Tanai?
It's returned.
When? Give me something. Pretend you're giving me something. Okay, so right now I own it completely. Yeah. If 3 days from now I don't live up to what I agree to, I don't fulfill the Tanai, then retroactively, even though I thought I owned it for 3 days, I didn't.
And how do you fulfill the Tanai if there's no kinyan?
No, I made a kinyan when I took it from you.
If there's no kinyan back, how do you fulfill the Tanai?
No, I gave it back to you. The Tanai is giving it back to you. The shaila is whether you need a kinyan to reestablish ownership or not. My Tanai is to give it to you.
That's not implied by giving it back?
No. Well, that's the shaila. That's exactly the question. So those Rishonim say, no, I give it back to you, so now I'm off the hook. I can go sailing. Whether you own, you might. The question is whether you own some, whether you're holding something you own or not. And according to them, you don't own it yet. I may have fulfilled my tanai, but it's still mine until you make a kinyan on it. Whereas according to the ksos, it automatically goes back to you the moment that the tanai is fulfilled. That's exactly the point. Right? The fact that you're unclear about it makes sense because it's not. It's tricky. So I'm glad you gave me the opportunity to clarify. But that's exact. You're assuming, which is fine, like the rover shown him. I think, or maybe it's like the other one. I don't know who you're assuming. Like. But the point is, but it's important to clarify. That's exactly the line in which they're parting. Yeah. One more question, then we're going to move on. Yeah.
Where is it before? Why do you think you're that good?
Because I said I did. That's, I only gave it to you on condition. That's the snide.
Well, it doesn't matter. It goes back automatically.
But then I'm holding stolen property. Plus, if I don't fulfill my tanai, then as I just mentioned, retroactively I didn't own it. So if I wanted to fulfill the lulav, so it was, I thought I fulfilled lulav. I think I'm a tzaddik because I shook that lulav, and I went to the mikvah with the gartel. But now 3 days later, chalamoid, I didn't fulfill my tanai. I didn't give it back to you. Retroactively, I didn't own it. I was holding something that was not mine. Yeah, that's called shol. I was borrowing it. Or maybe if you want to give particular, maybe you even call me a gazlan. But I didn't own it. It's not lachem. If a retroactive, you thought you fulfilled the mitzvah of sukkah, a lulav, but you hadn't. So you have very, first of all, you said you were going to. That's the real reason you have to, because you said you would. You accepted on condition to return it. And specifically when it comes to lulav, for example, now if it would just be a lawnmower or something like that, then the stakes are not as high. But in lulav in particular, you really have to give it back. Because if you don't fulfill your tanai, retroactively, I mean, you didn't own it.
That's a fee.
Everybody. That's the Gemara. That's the Gemara. The Shaila is not what happened. It says how to understand what was happening. The one place so far where we've seen a practical difference, only one so far, we've done a lot of talking for one concrete nafkamina. We've seen two different approaches conceptually, but the concrete nafkamina, or if you add the mechila, maybe we've seen two, but the main concrete nafkamina we saw is, does the original giver, does he need to make a new kinyan to reacquire ownership, or does he reestablish ownership automatically? Listen, I want to go a little further, but we're going to move on. Okay, let's just see a little bit more. I hope it'll become clear. Plus, this way you'll learn more Torah too. Unless you really don't understand something. Okay, good. Number five. You know, I'm going to skip. We're going to skip five, but first let's do four. Number four is world famous. The Gemara says, "Lo likne inish oshana liyanuka biyomatava kama." My timer, diyanuka makne kane yaknuya lo makne. So in the Rishonim, for some reason, I'm not 100% sure why. Maybe they had a different nosach of the Gemara or Girsa. The Rishonim all quote this Gemara. They use the term lulava and not hoshana, but it's just that's just in a detail. The Gemara says very clearly, well known, that on the first day or days of Yontif, you cannot give your lulav as a matana to your child, to a katan, because then you'll be in trouble with the rest of Yom Tov. Why? Because midaraisa, a katan can't be kona anything. Midarabanan, however, we let them be kona things, they can acquire things, but they cannot be matana, they can't give it to you. So if you give your katan a lulav, he will be kona it. But hey, you still need it for the rest of Yom Tov. Right? Either the second day or the chalamoid, right? Midar Bana, we shake the lulav the whole of Yom Tov. But let's say I hadn't shaken the lulav yet. Or let's say it's Yom Tov Sheni and there's still a din of lachem. Says the Gemara, you're going to be in trouble. Because now your katan owns the lulav, but he doesn't have the halachic ability to give it back to you. So you'll be chaser lachem. He'll be yotzei, you won't be able to be yotzei. That's the Gemara. Who does that work better for? Everyone hear that?
Bet.
Make me proud. Right? That works. And just so you should know, we rode him hard, very hard last year. And look, what we produced. A budding Talmud Chacham. That works beautifully according to the Rush. And you know how we know that? Not only because he said so, even better than Shanabet, the Rush himself. The Rush himself brings us his main raya in Shas. Choshe Mishpat, his main raya that Matana Sahasir is 100% a bona fide Matana, is from the story of the kid. After all, he says, if I didn't really own it, and there was no requirement to make a new kinyan upon return, then what's the problem with the little kid? If you hold like my hourglass metaphor, that Mamela, the sand runs out, and the ownership just goes back, so then what's the difference if you give it to a kid Or you give it to Rav Yashiv. I mean, who cares who you gave it to? Mamela, the ownership's going to transfer back to me. The whole assumption, the whole implied assumption of the Gemara, says the Rush, you see clearly, unequivocally, unambiguously, is that there has to be a new kinyan on the back end, and P.S., the cotton can't do that. If there was no need for a new kinyan, then who cares that it's a cotton? So if the Rush loves that Gemara, who's in big trouble? The Ktsos is in big trouble. Now, we don't know exactly what Ravigya Katz said about, thought about that. As far as I know, the Tosfos Rid doesn't really try to resolve it. I forgot to double check today, but as far as I remember, we don't know. But we know the Rush does address it. The Rush is like in trouble now. What do I do? I meant the Ktsos. No, I'm sorry. The Ktsos. So the Ktsos comes up with the original and creative line, which is hard to believe, but this is what he says. The Ktsos says at the end of number four, the Gemara only meant if you gave it to your child, you know, how many of your fathers, when they gave you your lulav, said, by the way, Yankel, this is a matam asahasir, you have to give it back. No, they said, here's the lulav. Of course they assumed you were going to give it back. It was implied, but it was not stated. Says the Rosh, excuse me, says the Ksos, that makes all the difference in the world. When did the Gemara say that there needs to be a kinyan on the back end to return it? Only if you gave it to him bestama. Then Enchanami, you're in trouble. But says the Sosachoshin, Halacha Lamaisa, this is a huge chiddush if we would accept this, which we don't, but if we would accept this, a huge chiddush. Says the Sosachoshin, if you have a little katan, you have your 10-year-old son, you want to give him the loaf? So just say explicitly, I'm giving this to you as a gift, I'm going to ask that you return it to me. Then there's no problem, because it'll automatically return to me. When does he have to be maknit back to me? Only if I gave it to him without any specific explication. So it's a tremendous chiddush, even though the Gemara seems to say very clearly, don't give the lulav to your son on that first day, or you're going to be in trouble. The Ksos is not actually, no, it's okay. You're in trouble if you're careless. But if you're careful, and you specifically say, I'm giving it to you on condition that it's returned to me, then Mamele will return at the end of his usage, and Mamele, you'll have no problem. So, on the one hand, the simple understanding of the Gemara by far supports Rov Rishonim and the Rush and others wave that Gemara like a flag. You see, this is the proof that we're right. The Ktsos is up a creek. It's impossible. He cannot accept that Gemara the way everyone else reads it. So on genius points, he has a lot, because he has this unbelievably creative and original reading of the Gemara, which wrestles out of the proof. It's not such a vice script. He can sneak out. You know, whether you or I are convinced that he's reading the Gemara correctly or not, that's one question. Halacha l'maisa, it would be a huge chiddush if we accepted him, and in Shulchan Aruch we don't. But at least we see in a very specific sukkah-related topic where you have this, where the global machlokes plays itself out. I'm going to skip number five, and I want to conclude with number six, which is a very important halacha l'maisa discussion, but I think it will see it has very significant implications, and it's very interesting, and it comes right out of the Mishnah Berurah and the later posting. Mishnah Berurah talks about the following case. Let's say I give it to you. And I'm a big lamdanite, or at least I did daf yomi. So I know the story of the five rabbis on the boat. Rabbi Gamliel gave it to one Tana. But instead of that Tana giving it back to him, he gave it to the second, he gave it to the third, he gave it to the fourth, and Rabbi Akiva will finally give it back to him. Now the assumption of the Gemara is that Rabbi Gamliel didn't care. He wanted everyone to have the lulav. And generally, if I just give it to you, and I don't tell you what you can or can't do with it, we assume, like the story, I can give it to somebody else as long as I eventually give it back to you in fulfillment of my agreement. But says the Mishnah Berurah, take that back. So yes. But says the Mishnah Berurah, let's say it's a very expensive lulav, I'm nervous, last year I did that and somebody dropped my esrog, I like you, I trust you, here, you can have my esrog, my lulav almanas lahasir, that's one tonight that you have to give it back to me. I'm adding a second tonight in the contract. You can't give it to anybody else. You have to give it back to me. You cannot let anyone else use it. I'm letting you use it, but nobody else. He says to Mishnah Berurah, no problem. He's a nice guy. He's not a nice guy. You should do it. You shouldn't do it. Go speak to the Mashkiach. And the Beis Medrash, when you come to the Rosh Yeshiva and you ask him what's right or wrong, says to Mishnah Berurah, no problem. If you accept it, those are the conditions. If you give it back to him right away, then you fulfill your condition. If you don't give it to him right away and you let someone else use it, then you didn't fulfill your condition, and retroactively you didn't own it. But it's a legitimate tanai, he can make it. And as long as you follow his tanai, you're yotzei when you take that lulav. That's a regular account. It's an interesting case, but it's in the end, it's really bland. It's just matal masasir stam. It's different, but it's really the same. Okay? In the Bir Halacha, he quotes from the Siddur Derech HaChaim, That's a sitter. It's called the Derech Chaim sitter, where the author, Rav Yaakov Milisa, paskins that in such a case, if I give you a matam hasahasir on the first day of Sukkot, and I tell you, by the way, don't let anyone else use it, that is not good. I mean, I'm allowed to do it. It's mine. I do what I want. But that already impinges on your ownership. If you take such a lulav, that's not lachem. Lachem means I can do what I want with it. You start telling me what I can and can't do with it, then obviously I don't own it, and therefore I am not yotzei. Even though the Gemara explicitly said matan hasahasir works for lulav, says the Siddur Derech Chaim, that only works if I just give it to you plain. But if I give it to you with all sorts of addendums in the back of the contract, don't do this, then that doesn't work. It's a machlokas between the Mishnah Berurah and the Derech HaChaim. Comes along Rav Moshe Sternbach. Anyone ever hear of Rav Moshe Sternbach? He's currently alive, so as long as he should live and be well. I think he's one of the heads, or the head of the Eidach HaRedis now. He's from South Africa, then he made Aliyah. Rav Moshe Sternbach has a very well-known, popular set of Sfarim called Mo'adim Vizmanim. So he quotes this machlokas between the Mishnah Berurah and the Derech Chaim. He says, what did the Derech Chaim come up with this chumrah for? This chumrah that you can't, you know, if I put any more conditions and I limit your usage, then all of a sudden it doesn't work. It's a huge chiddush. Who told him such a chumrah? So says Rav Sternbach, I think that this goes back to the machlokas that Rabbi Galil has been speaking about for 45 minutes. It goes all the way back to the fundamental machlokas between the Ktzos and the Nesivis, between the Rishonim. What is the definition of Matam HaSahasir? And he says, if you held, then Matam HaSahasir is 100% a full Kenyan, completely, so that I already own it. The fact that he says, don't do this, okay, that's restrictive, but it doesn't take away from the fact that, in my opinion, if I'm the Rosh, Ritva, see this? It doesn't take away from the fact that I own it. It's a Matam HaGemura. So why shouldn't I be able to fulfill Luluf? So that can't be the reason. Ooh, he says, I know. It must be that this Derech Chaim, his Chumrah, is going based on the Ktos. Because what did the Ktos say? The Ktos said, listen, even when you own it now, it's really only temporary. It's a Kinyan L'sha'ah. That's weaker. We know the future. The future is you have to return it any minute anyway. Any day now anyway. So it's really, really temporary. You have a Zechus, but it's yours, but it's only temporarily yours. Once I start restricting what you can do with it, that's already, like, I started off a little weaker, and then I add that to the equation, and I start restricting, you know, it's only a temporary ownership anyway. Now I can't even do what I want with you in the temporary time. So that must be what he was coming from. That's already too much. You can't say that you have lechem. Right? He says, if you read it inside, in the bottom, according to the poskim, that it's a matana lizman, it's only temporary. When we come up with mahani, but yet the Gemara does say it works. Shaper ichmiru, then the Derech Chaim has a chumrah. Shlomahani el im yeshlo es ezechus. It only works because I have a zechus. I can be like the guys on the boat. I can give it to you. Then I'll return it. I have a zechus. I have certain flexibility, a certain independence. But if I even take that away from me, then it won't be good. Okay? So now, I want to conclude with the following. And by the way, we have a lot of time until the next year. But please remind them to put the air conditioning on next time because I am dying. And I can see by those of you who are not paying attention as well as you usually do that I'm not the only one who doesn't like stuffy rooms. But I want to conclude with the following, and please listen to me carefully. We could quibble, or we could accept, or we could quibble with Rav Sternbach's Svara. And if I just was putting two things on the board, which side makes more sense? Let's move around the pieces on the board. So he thinks that this Derech Chaim goes better with Ksos. Personally, I'm not so convinced. But that would be one way we could argue with him. Unfortunately, and I say unfortunately because I probably, since Baruch Shem, I live in Israel, Baruch Shem, he lives in Israel, in theory I could go ask him. But this is going back now 6 or 7 years when I first read this piece from him. I've always been bothered by a much bigger problem. And that's why I can say without any doubt he's wrong. Why do I say that? Because you cannot say that the Derech Chaim holds like Tiksos. For the simple reason that the author of the Siddur Derech Chaim is the Nesivos. It's the Nesivos Siddur. That's the Derech Chaim. And the Nesivos paskens you need a Kinyan. Because the Nesivos paskens, like the Rosh and the Ritva, that it's a full 100% Kinyan. So his Chumrah and the Siddur, whether you like the Chumrah or not, but you cannot explain that based on the Ksos, unless he's schizophrenic. He meaning the Nesivos. Which he probably wasn't. So, I don't have any explanation for it, other than it seems to me b'mechilas kvodo to just be a mistake. That cannot be. So it must be, and with this we'll conclude, not that I'm convinced that the Nesivos is right, You could hold like the you could agree with the generally like the Ritva and the Rosh and agree with the Mishnah Berurah. But the Gavra, Rav Yaakov Milisa, Rav Yaakov Lorberbaum of Lisa, more well known as the Nesivos HaMishpat, he, as an individual, he clearly held that if I own it, if it's a Matana Gemura, I own it 100%, who cares about the future, the future is the future, I live in the present, that means that I can do whatever I want with it, because I can do whatever I want with something that I... And if once you start telling me I can't do this, I can't do that, and that's in the present, that's not in the future, that limiting of my ownership is already chisaron in lachem. The Mishnah Berurah argues on him, might agree that you own it completely, but just like, for example, when you buy one of these CDs, and sometimes they tell you, you know, you're not allowed to use on Shabbos, not allowed to copy, but I own it, don't I? Yes, but I'm only selling it to you if you accept those conditions. So too, Mishnah Berurah says, I'm only giving you the lulav and esrog if you accept the condition not to lend it to anybody else. Why can't I do that, says Mishnah Berurah? Doesn't change the fact that you really own it, I'm really giving it to you, but I'm only giving it to you if you accept that condition upon yourself. So that, to me, is an interesting, but a side machlokas between the Nesivos and the Mishnah Berurah. But fundamentally, the Derech HaChaim will have to agree, because after all, he's one of the authors of the opinion, that really, 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 you own it completely. So next time someone's in Har Noth, if you see Rav Schnarbach, with great reverence and respect, if you could ask him this question and let me know what his answer is, I'd be greatly appreciative. I want to wish everyone a Shana Tova. You should have a wonderful year. Shana Yeshiva is special. We'll see each other in Cheshvan, please God.